One. This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 107. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman. And today I'm also joined by Jacob and Greta. Hello,
guys.
What's
happening?
Hey, how's it going?
And this is probably a shock to some of our listeners, because Greta who? Greta is joining us for the first time ever on the program, and we are so excited to have her.
I am excited to be here. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little nervous, but ready to share my input.
Awesome. Well, today is our usual news episode, and we are bringing all kinds of stories from across the country. We've got quite a few law updates, and this is not unusual because we're kind of in the meat of the legislative session for all the various states. And so we got a lot of updates as far as that goes. Also, some great, I mean, really great justified stories I think you are not going to want to miss, including, I think today, Jacob, should be like titled something about, you know, the day or the week of the shotgun, because there's a couple of really great ones involving shotguns. Today's episode is brought to you by Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition. Proudly made right here in the USA by Sig Sauer, one of the things I really appreciate is that Sig Sauer engineers lead the way. They have designed their Elite Performance FMJ target ammunition to the same performance specifications as their Elite V-Crown self-defense jacketed hollow points. This ensures that you train how you fight while also saving you money. If you are looking for reliable ammunition at a great price, check out Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition today, available at many of your favorite sporting goods stores, online, and especially at our website, concealedcarry.com/SigAmmo. And being that it is Monday episode time, we've got our weekly training tip, which is actually brought to us by Greta, and we're titling this Last Looks. So Greta, take it away.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Riley. So my training tip of the week is if you have a new holster, be sure that you take the time to do some mirror dry fire. And this is practicing your draw and seeing how your garments work with this new holster. Ladies, especially for you, if you have a new outfit that you're wearing with this holster, take the extra 5 minutes to do some dry fire drawing from that holster to see how the garment is going to work should you need to use it. Tip of the day. Tip of the day.
I dig it because you nailed it on the head. I don't know if we've ever covered it quite to this level as far as, this is like, you know, there's those things in life where you just do it, you take it for granted, and you don't think about other people may not necessarily know or think about that, right? And this is one of those things where when I'm carrying concealed, I'm getting ready to go out for the day, I usually just do a quick check, a once over, last looks as it's called here as the training tip today, and just making sure the garment's working, making sure that I'm concealed, and do a couple of dry fire practice draws with your gun unloaded. Okay. This is like what you do before you load the gun and then go out. Right. So do a couple of dry fires, getting out of the holster, back in the holster, all that sort of stuff. Really great training tip. Jacob, any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I would add to that, you know, we kind of talked about, you know, a new outfit, but also maybe it's a jacket or a coat or, you know, an accessory or something that, you know, a backpack, you know, just little things like that change, you know, the way you draw, the way you access the gun and a lot of those little things. So I like the idea of the last look.
Yeah, awesome. especially with the change of seasons. I mean, new seasons, new clothing, especially bringing up the coat. That's a really good point, Jacob.
No joke, because just this like last week or two, it's been like summer here in Colorado, and then what happened yesterday? Yeah, just like nasty weather, cold came back in. So, good thoughts, guys. Great tip. Also, today's episode is brought to you by Sports Afield and the book Shoot to Win by Chris Chang. So, without further ado, let's get into today's news. And I'll kick it off here with our first story is out of Utah, where the Utah governor signs a bill. And we talked about this being a possibility a few weeks ago on the podcast. Well, he just signed the bill that allows 18-year-olds to obtain concealed weapon permits. Governor Gary Herbert signed 13 more bills So this was just one amongst many, and I don't know that all those are necessarily gun-related bills. But yeah, Jacob, you're really familiar with the details on this and what it means. This is really unprecedented. I don't think there's any other states out there, is there, that allows an 18-year-old to get a CHP or CWP?
Ooh, you know, I wouldn't say that so quickly. I mean, I certainly know states that allow 19 and 20-year-olds to get permits. 18, you know, I'm now hesitant to say it out loud because you're making me doubt myself. But I don't think Utah's the first. And the couple things that are worth clarifying relative to this Utah legislation. One is that it's a provisional permit. So it's not the same permit that a 21-year-old would receive. And also worth clarifying is that there is an exception built into here about schools. Because in Utah, traditionally, a permit would allow you to carry in any, you know, elementary, middle, junior, high, or high school. But this provisional permit being issued to 18, 19, and 20-year-olds does not allow them to carry into an elementary, middle, junior, high, or high school. So if you were 18, 19, or 20, and you were going to a college campus, that would be fine. You could carry now, assuming you have this new provisional permit. But if you're a senior in high school and you're 18 years old, and you go get your provisional concealed carry permit, you can't be packing heat to high school.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I think it's important to note that this new permit really has to be provisional. It has to be something different than their regular permit, because if it wasn't, then Utah's great reciprocity that they have would go away. You know darn well that many other states would say, well, fine, we're not recognizing Utah permits anymore because we know they might allow 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds to come in to our state carrying concealed.
Yeah, it's a valid point. There's actually a lot of states that don't honor certain permits because, you know, they're issued, you know, too young.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Greta, I'm curious, what do you think about 18-year-olds packing heat?
This seems a little bit crazy to me, gentlemen. 18 years old seems like a lot of responsibility to give to these kids. Kids, I mean, they're essentially kids when you're 18 years old. So I'm not sure how I feel about it, to be totally honest. I think it should be more along the lines of give them the tool of situational awareness. Situational awareness and more college campus education. But I definitely understand the feeling of wanting to protect yourself when you're on the college campus. So college campus, great. I'm glad that they don't allow the high school kids to carry.
So here's, yeah. I looked it up, by the way. So here are states that allow 18-year-olds to get concealed carry permits. Alabama, Indiana, Maine, Maryland. Well, it says Massachusetts, but like they issue anybody a permit. In Missouri, if you're military, you can get it at age 18. Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota. So there's actually quite a few. I don't know how many I just named, but it seemed like a good solid like 10 or so states that allow an 18-year-old to have a permit.
I'm kind of mind blown by that, actually. Huh. Well,
I'm equally as surprised. I can't believe that.
Now, I will go on record as saying I think all of our military men and women, regardless of age, should be able to carry a gun and carry concealed and have a permit. This one's interesting, yeah. But with that in mind, Jacob, as far as that Utah is certainly not even close to being alone in this category, I guess there's already kind of a case study in place. I mean, we're seeing other states that have done this already, and I'm not hearing of, you know, World War III being declared in the land. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting to follow.
What might make this unique, and I'd have to go back and do some more research, but of all those other states I just named, I don't know that any of them allow campus carry. You know, so maybe what would make this Utah situation unique is the idea that now we have 18, 19, and 20-year-olds carrying on a college campus while in school. That might be unique here.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, well, we'll certainly, you know, keep an eye on that, and I suspect that things are going to be fine. It is, you know, as Greta said, kind of like, wow, you know, that's a lot of responsibility. That's for sure. It's a lot of responsibility for all adults. And there are certainly those that are older than 18 and older than 21 that probably shouldn't have a gun or a permit. So, yeah. Well, speaking of, and I'm actually going to jump ahead two stories here. I hope you guys don't mind from the outline, because I think it is, I think it just goes right along with this Utah story. And that is the one out of Arkansas, where Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson signed a campus carry bill into law. So, and this was just a few days ago. Pretty exciting stuff. So I love seeing this kind of stuff, because here we've had campus carry in Colorado for years. It's been in Utah for years and years and years. And we've seen this movement, this campus carry movement, you know, really pick up some steam in the last few years. So now we can add Arkansas to that list.
Yeah, I in this article, there's some cool quotes that I really liked. Here's one from the governor. He said, "I've consistently recognized that there is, first of all, a Second Amendment privilege, but also a security and safety benefit from firearms by the people who are properly trained." I thought that was cool that he said that.
That is a really great quote, and that stood out to me as well. Kind of hard that it doesn't, you know, stick out, because this article published on our website, concealedcarry.com, kind of emphasized that quote. But it's really true, as I think we prove every week on this podcast with our justified stories, where everyday citizens defend themselves. And so there is a security and safety benefit to our society in general, I think, that people who are trained are able to defend themselves and others. Yeah, jump in,
Greta. Sorry, Riley. I don't mean to cut you off, but I think it's great that they still have the requirement to take the 8-hour training course along with this, and having the option to conceal carry on campus. Jacob went through the list earlier of 18-year-olds that are allowed to get a permit in state, so it's 10 out of 50. If this is something that's happening, seems like most of the kids on campus are going to be a little bit older at that 21 age mark, so they are junior seniors, hopefully a little bit more responsible and developed at that point and able to carry on campus. Because I know if I was a college student, I have no interest in losing my life in a classroom. I'm there to learn, you know, contribute to society later in life.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I wish I could like spout out which episode we talked about campus carry. It was in the 20s, I think. But there's just no data or track record or anything that suggests ever that a college student in, you know, on a campus who's carrying concealed legally has ever, you know, pulled it out to settle a disagreement with a student or a professor or do anything other than shoot at bad guys and bad gals. But, you know, like all things, it's like, you know, it's all about the data set. And so we've had limited number of states who have had campus carry in the past. Last year, we added Texas. Now we're adding Arkansas. So as more and more states adopt campus carry, you know, we'll have more insight into, you know, how to deal with potential risks of this. But at this point, you know, the data would suggest there are no risks. Now, you know, time will tell, right, as we continue to grow and figure it out.
It was episode 44, by the way, concealed carry on campus.
I was way off.
Wow. But yeah, so if you haven't listened to that episode already, go check it out. That was, boy, that's quite a while ago. I'm surprised you even remembered we did that episode. That was back in August of last year. So time flies, man. Cool. So what does that make? 12 states, 13 states, something like that, that allow campus carry? I know it's pretty close in number to the constitutional carry number as well. So,
well, it's complicated, because what happens is you have a limited number of states that explicitly the state statute says, yes, you can carry, right? There's a certain number of those. But there's also a large number of states where essentially the law says it's up to the university if the university wants to allow it or not. And so in those states, you know, they might be called campus carry states, but the vast majority of universities don't allow it. And so, you know, trying to say how many states currently allow it and don't is a little bit confusing. Now, here's an interesting, you know, number from armedcampuses.org. It says, currently, 4,400 colleges and universities prohibit guns on campus. So that gives you a bit of a ballpark. But states that explicitly allow it, Idaho, Utah, Colorado, Texas, Tennessee, and now Arkansas, explicitly allow it by statute. And then states that are kind of like, well, it's up to the school, you know, we'll let them decide, you know, Oregon, Kansas, Wisconsin, Mississippi. And then there's a whole bunch more where, you know, it's kind of really gets more complicated as you go. Mm.
Yeah, good thoughts, good thoughts. So going back in our outline here to, this is in Ohio and published on our OhioGunTraining.com site. Some changes are going into effect for Ohio with regards to concealed carry. Jacob, take the lead on this one.
Yeah, so this is Senate Bill 199. It went into effect, I think, on the 20th of March or the 21st. So, you know, just a couple of days ago last week. And essentially what this does is it removes the restrictions that existed for some of the places where you previously could not take a firearm. So for example, you know, non-secure areas of an airport, you know, places where you might be picking someone up, dropping someone off, you know, checking in a bag, baggage areas, those kinds of things, you know, now, you could have your firearm with you in those situations. I think there was a handful of other interesting things relative to college campuses. I think that there was, you know, some confusion about this. The law did not remove the prohibition of concealed carry on college campuses. However, it did authorize that certain people can carry weapons on campus, like employees can now store their guns in their cars, you know, while they're on campus, things like that. So it seemed pretty reasonable, and there were a handful of changes that, you know, kind of came about from the Senate Bill 199. But I don't think it's, you know, completely crazy.
Yeah. Right on. Cool. And we kind of touched on it, I think, a few weeks ago or maybe even a couple of months ago, talking about how this was a possibility. I know this was definitely on Matthew Marister's radar, our instructor out there in Ohio. In fact, I think I did a podcast, maybe episode, talking a little bit about that with him. So pretty cool to see this go into effect and give people more options as far as where and how they can carry. So let's jump now to South Dakota, where once again, we've got a governor doing things relating to the Second Amendment. However, in this case, he didn't sign a couple of bills. He vetoed a couple of bills. And I know this is really getting a few people riled up. He is a Republican governor. He is, you know, probably, you know, the more part conservative, which generally would lend towards these types of things going through, but he has a record for being a little bit more liberal, I guess, on some of the Second Amendment issues. So he's definitely not afraid to make it known that it's okay to limit the Second Amendment. So he vetoed two concealed carry bills. One of those was a constitutional carry bill. And the other one was allowing persons to carry a concealed person in the state capitol building with an enhanced concealed pistol permit. So, there you go. Those did not go through, and we are not adding South Dakota to the list of constitutional carry states.
Yeah, and it's interesting because what's the quote? I'm trying to let me find it. He said something to the effect of, here it is, "I support the right to bear arms. South Dakota's current permit process is simple and straightforward, and permits can be obtained in a matter of minutes. It's paramount that our state protect the rights of our citizens while at the same time protecting the lives of our citizens." You know, it's interesting because this is definitely one of those topics where even within, you know, the gun rights community, there is some debate. Regular listeners probably have some sense for where I stand on that. But you know, not everybody agrees with the idea of let's let everybody carry a gun, even if they don't have a permit. And the governor actually, you know, cited, you know, some stats about the number of people who were denied permits. I'm trying to find the number in here. Where was it?
600. Nearly 600.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I think he brings up an interesting point of the law enforcement training focuses on knowing when to pull the trigger and when not to. I think that's something that people need to be aware of as well. You know, think through that process and go seek out training for that process, because that's not a natural thing for anybody.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very good thoughts there. I definitely agree with you, Greta. South Dakotans have tried to get some of these things through in the past, and they failed, and they failed again. So looks like you might need to be in change of a governor if you want to see these sorts of things get passed in the future. So anyway, good luck. Let's see. On guns.com, it was reported, and this is a really interesting story, a police department janitor sentenced to 78 months for stealing guns from evidence room. And this story is loaded with all kinds of real gems, Jacob and Greta. because here's the story. We have a former police department custodian. He worked there for a number of years, and he is now sentenced to 6.5 years in federal prison because he stole as many as 50 guns from the evidence room. Now, here's the thing that kind of jumped out at me, and then I'll let you guys kind of jump in. But Roy Ellis Hunter, age 70, was indicted last year on 2 counts of being a felon in possession of firearms, which he took from the Fairfield Police Department and sold out of his home. Apparently, he sold a few to an undercover ATF agent or informant. They bought a handful of guns to start, and then they came back a few weeks later and bought a whole bunch more. And so here's the other gem, and that is that one of the guns he sold to this undercover agent or informant was in a bag clearly marked evidence. So my first two thoughts here, folks, is number one, he's charged as being a felon in possession of firearms. Why is the police department hiring a felon to clean their agency and their evidence locker room? And two, why is this dude so dumb to sell a gun in an evidence bag?
Yeah, there's some problems there. I think, I mean, for me, if I was the public, right? Oh, I guess I am the public, huh?
You are the public.
Yeah, who would have thought, right? I'm a taxpayer. So
John Q.
John Q. I'm like, to me, the bigger issue, like I accept that there's dumb people who do dumb things. I struggle more with the idea that my police department is hiring felons to clean evidence rooms. That to me is the bigger issue here for, you know.
Well, can I tell you my personal struggle with this? He's only getting 78 months. That doesn't seem long enough to me. You are obviously slightly intelligent to be stealing the guns. However, you failed to take them out of the bag and you are selling them to ATF agents. So he had some sort of thought process in place to get them out. I think he needs to do more time. This is a serious crime.
I agree with you. Now, just so it's clear, this custodian was a former member of the Outcast Motorcycle Club, and he was convicted on federal racketeering, cocaine distribution, and counterfeiting charges in the mid-1980s. So I don't know if they were just like, yeah, that was long enough ago that, yeah, it's cool, man, you know. But yeah, I definitely agree with you, Greta, that 6.5 years, I mean, this was pretty serious stuff. I mean, he had over 50 guns that he had stolen from the evidence room. I mean, this wasn't just like a, oh, my judgment got the better of me and I swiped that one that was left out on the counter, you know? And, you know, this was like a very planned and deliberate operation.
It was a slippery slope. He was like, the first one was easy. I'm going to continue on and see how far I can go with it. Who knows? Had he not sold it to the wrong person, he could still be doing it to this day.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely plenty of blame to go around here, though, I think, with regard to the police department. It's just ironic that, you know, they are obviously trying to do their best to take illegal guns off the streets and illegal criminals off the streets. But actually, because of a slip of their own, some of those guns possibly ended up back out on the streets. So that's a doozy. Now, it looks like it's time for our first justified story. This one's fairly short and simple, which is why I thought it'd be great to start with. Out of San Antonio, reported on the local Fox News affiliate there, a burglary suspect was shot by a homeowner during struggle for gun. Did you guys read this story?
Yeah, I read this story and I have no interest in wrestling for a gun.
Wise of you.
Like, absolutely not. That does not sound like fun in any way, shape, or form.
I love the way you said that. I have no interest in struggling for a gun. Yeah, yeah, me neither. I'm with you.
No.
Yeah. So the story here is that it sounds like it happened at night. I saw another story. It seemed to indicate that the homeowner had wakened in the night, found a man going through his dresser and taking items. He was wearing some of the victim's clothing, and at this point, the homeowner, you know, accosted the intruder. They got into a fight. Rawlings is the suspect, a 26-year-old, he pulled a gun and pointed at the victim's face, and then they struggled over the gun, and somehow Rawlings was shot. So, fortunately, I mean, yeah, it's crazy to think, you know, that this homeowner had to, he had no means whereby to defend himself other than to basically parry this gun away, take it away, fight for it, whatever. And luckily, he survived, which he's just incredibly lucky as far as I'm concerned, unless he has some amazing martial arts skills that we're not aware of.
Yeah, you know, and what's funny to me is that we actually get stories like this every once in a while. I mean, I hate to say it happens all the time. That may seem like an exaggeration, but it's definitely not the first time we've reported on a story where a homeowner takes gun away from suspect and shoots suspect with it. That does seem to kind of happen on occasion.
Yep.
Well, and kudos to him for, like you said, maybe he has these martial arts skills. Wow. Good for the homeowner at that point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I've been privileged. I've taken some training that, you know, where we practice weapon disarming, and it is not my favorite training. it's really hard. It's a lot harder than it looks. And just because of the studying that I've done and looking at video, you know, there's all kinds of videos out there of disarmings and things where I suspect, you know, in a training environment, it's already really hard and it's difficult to master the skills. I can only imagine how much harder it is to actually disarm somebody in real life, you know, because in the training environment, like even when we try to simulate it perfectly, it never is reality, and it can't be. It's dang near impossible to make the training environment just like the real world. And in the real world, there's all kinds of variables that are unknowns. I'm with you, Greta, in that I have zero desire to ever have to disarm somebody by hand that has a gun that's trained on me already.
That's right.
Yeah, one thing I would add is that a lot of this, I think, I shouldn't say a lot, but I do think that attitude is a factor. And by attitude, I mean like the you know, how badly do you want it kind of thing, right? I mean, if you really are in, you know, just emotionally committed to survival, I do think that helps. I mean, I'm not saying that some other training wouldn't be better, or having your own gun and shooting first would be better, but I am suggesting that, you know, your mental, you know, dogged, you know, determination to survive this is going to help you in this kind of a struggle.
Well, and I hope that everybody has emotional commitment to staying alive, like stay alive. I think that's very much ingrained in us, and emotional commitment to life. Wise words from Jacob today.
I think we just came up with a new theme song for you, Greta, and it's going to be staying alive.
I'm sorry, I'm all about living. I don't know how else to say that.
Yeah, I'm a fan too.
Yeah, I think I'll jump on that boat with you. You know, it's really, there's something to be said for what you just said, Jacob, in that if you are in a situation where you have to do this, if you are going to succeed, you have to be fully committed, and you just have to go all in with everything you got, because it is those that are not fully committed that will end up dead in these kind of situations. A quick example, and I don't know if this is a perfect example or not, but there's a well-known video out there of a police officer who has a suspect that already has a gun out, and he's got it pointed at the police officer's head, right? And it's a pretty grainy video, and it's also quite gruesome, but there's a lot of lessons to be learned from this. So basically, where the video cuts in, we see that this thug he's already closer than arm's length to this police officer, to this cop. Okay, gun out, trained on the cop. And the cop, what is he doing? He's trying to draw his gun. And I don't know whether it's because he just got totally caught off guard, that he's just kind of freaking out at that point, but as he can't get the retention off, you know, turned off or deactivated on his holster. And so you could see him struggle 3-4 times trying to get his gun out. And I think he finally does, but before he's able to do anything to this crook, the dude just shoots him in the head, and down he goes. He's done. He's out of the fight. I use an example, and it's a grim example, but it's the reality of these kind of situations. And honestly, I say I would not want to be in this kind of fight. That's certainly true. But if someone's already got a gun on you, they've already got the drop on you, they're that close to you, they're in your face, you cannot draw that gun fast enough and shoot them before, I mean, you're not going to win that fight. So you have two alternatives. One, create some sort of diversion, which we should do maybe an episode about this. So I could load it with videos for the resources, Jacob, where guys use diversions to create that opportunity to draw and then shoot. Or you got to go hands-on. Mm-hmm. And that's your two options. And neither one is a very good situation. But no matter which one you go with, you have to be fully 100% committed or you will lose.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point for people to think about as well. You know, if you in that situation, the fully committed part to it, drawing your gun, what are you going to do? How are you going to create that distraction? I think that's a really good thought process you've just put into people's heads, Riley.
Well, thank you. But this is what I do is hopefully communicate to people the tools they need to survive, because we are all about staying alive, Greta. So on to our next story, which is, out of South Carolina. Mm. Jacob, you want to take the lead on this one?
Oh, I'm so glad. I love this story. This is really awesome. So if you find the link in the show notes and you read through this, it takes a while. They really bury the lead in this one, whoever the journalist is. So let me just tell it in chronological order. So woman knocks on door of homeowner in South Carolina and woman, you know, comes to door, right? So we got, you know, woman outside, woman inside. You know, the person who's knocked on the door, her name is Juanita Marie English. So English, okay? And she's got a fake badge on that says HOA. So she's pretending to be part of the homeowners association, and she's talking to the homeowner, female homeowner, about the neighborhood. And as she's doing this, she kind of signals to her, co-criminal dude, whose last name is White, and White attempts to force his way into the home. Now, White has gloves, he's armed, and he has a mask on, and he had rope with him, you know, suggesting that maybe he intended to tie somebody up. So this is pretty brazen, right? I mean, we're kicking our way in, and we're probably pretty intent on not doing good things. I mean, who's to say what exactly the plan was, but it wasn't going to end well for this family. So, you know, the homeowner, she tries to close the door, White kicks it in, and as he's making his way into the house, the male homeowner, the husband, he comes down the stairs armed with his gun. I don't know if he had just happened to have it on him or if he had just retrieved it or if he was suspicious, not very clear, but he comes downstairs with his gun and shoots White. And White makes it out the door into the front yard before he collapses and dies, you know, pronounced dead on scene.
Yeah, and keep in mind that so the person answering the door is the wife, is the female homeowner, and she has two young children right there that witness the whole thing, mm-hmm. which I thought was just like, whoa, that's crazy. Secondly, Juanita English, the second suspect, she ends up arrested, but not at the scene. She's actually caught later because she was noticed by a traffic cop that she was driving erratically. Pulls her over. She had an outstanding warrant. So I think they were kind of in the process of taking her in. But I'm guessing a smart cop or detective is like, something is interesting about this one, and shows the mugshot of the suspect English, Juanita English, to the female homeowner who identifies her as being the accomplice in the invasion or the attempted invasion. I thought that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, good police work.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Greta, can you imagine yourself being in this situation? Give us your thoughts. I'm curious.
Oh, man. I'm just going to fall back to the quote on the article because A, I would not be a happy camper. B, I believe this comes from Salisbury. Is he the coroner, I potentially
yeah,
think?
And I
think his quote is, in Berkeley County, if you kick someone's door in, you get shot. As long as I'm the coroner, that's going to be a justifiable homicide. Completely agree. If you are kicking in my door, I am not okay with that in any way, shape, or form. Absolutely not. Not in my house.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Glad that I would be able to protect myself. Period. End of story.
Yeah. I think there are some interesting lessons to be learned or taken away from this. First of all, this did occur at night. It's about 8:15 p.m. At least that's when the first police call came in. Secondly, this is the type of tactic that is sometimes employed with home invasions, with burglaries and robberies, where they dress up as a utility worker, or more often, you know, it's like how often do we have these security, you know, company salesmen or Xfinity or, you know, DirecTV, you know, that are going around, you know, these salespeople going around through the neighborhoods trying to sell their stuff. And, you know, so she dresses up as an HOA representative. They're super clever. You got to watch for this crap. Because that's their opportunity to at least get you to crack that door open. And once that door's cracked open, there's not a whole lot you can do to keep them out. So I thought that was something worth noting. You know, be aware and be mindful of who's at your door and who you're letting in.
To me, the scary thing is that implies other things. It implies that this was very prepared and planned and organized. Mm-hmm. And that is scary, right? Because it could be this family was targeted for a very specific reason. Of all the homes in the neighborhood, why this one? It implies that this was not just a random, like, hey, let's go kick in that door. You know, I mean, this was very deliberate. I mean, think about it. You're coming into the house. You know someone's home. You're going in armed and you're bringing rope with you. It's scary to think about where this one could have ended up.
Yeah, and you know, it actually states in the article that police believed that this particular home and the homeowners were targeted, but it doesn't appear that the homeowners knew the suspects. So how scary is that? You know, that these suspects target someone for whatever reason, but seemingly randomly, because you don't know who they are. Take a look at your own homes, your vehicles, and pay attention to certain things that might indicate or give a reason to criminals, potential criminals, to target you, right? Jacob, I mean, you're a pretty smart dude as far as security, home security goes. What would you suggest in that regard?
It's the standard stuff. I mean, I don't think there's special things here. I mean, do you have strong reinforced doors with strong locks? Do you have a method by which you can talk to someone at the door without you making yourself vulnerable? Do you have, you know, a nice peephole or camera or something so you can see who's there? You know, do you have a good storm door or screen door that you can keep locked that you can talk through so you're not completely opening yourself up? Do you have low cut bushes so that the accomplice can't be hiding in those bushes, you know, and not be visible and jump in, you know, at the last second? Do you have well lit streets? You have floodlights, you know, criminals hate being in the light. I mean, there's so many elements and they're probably not anything that any listener of this podcast hasn't heard before, but do you really do all those things?
Yeah. How about these new devices, these doorbells that, what is it? Nest, I think, is a company that makes it or something. I think there's another brand out there too, where it's a doorbell, but it has an integrated camera and, you know, it probably rings a doorbell inside your home, but it also like rings an app on your phone, and you could be like anywhere in the world as long as you got an internet connection. You know, somebody rings your doorbell and you can answer from your phone. What do you think about that stuff? I think that's really cool.
It's a great tool. I think you, as a consumer of that tool, you need to think how you're going to use it. How are you going to ask for that second form of identification? What is your process for verifying that they truly indeed need to be there? I think it's great. It would allow you extra time to reach out to your HOA and be like, okay, I'll be right back with you. I'll be right back with you. You don't even have to tell them why you're leaving your door or not opening your door and make that phone call, make that call to the Xfinity. Hey, did you guys actually send somebody here? If it feels a little bit fishy. So I think it'd be great technology. You just got to be sure that you're going to use it properly. to defend yourself in your home.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Awesome.
And I can tell you, I've been a door-to-door salesman before, and I had cops called on me more than one occasion. And, you know, door-to-door people are supposed to have solicitor permits. You know, you're supposed to have obtained a permit from the city that allows you to go door-to-door and knock. That's true in most cities. There are some that don't care and don't require it or don't, you know, don't allow you to obtain one. But, you know, you can always ask for a permit. You can always say, can you come back later? You can always say, we're just not interested. I mean, if you're really, you know, I mean, the HOA thing is a little different. It's not a solicitor, obviously, a little bit unique. Now, we saw one a couple of weeks ago, Riley, right, that we shared in the podcast where someone came to the door and she was just making a claim to, you know, my car's broke down. I need a phone. I mean, it wasn't even, no official representation of anything. Just, hey, I need help. And so those things get a little bit more, you know, uncomfortable. But I think the idea is, you know, am I going to open a door wide open so there's nothing between me and a potential suspect and say, what's up? How can I help you?
Yeah. Yeah. Give some thought to if you're the one that's actually knocking on someone's door. Any one of us could find ourselves in a situation where we get in a wreck, you know, or our car breaks down and we got to stop at somebody's house and ask for help. I was just thinking, since you mentioned it, Jacob, there's also been stories, I can think of one where a woman was shot because she was knocking kind of frantically on a homeowner's door looking for help after she got in an accident. And I'm sorry, like that's kind of a different tangent, I know, but like I was just thinking that, like flip it around and imagine if you're the one on the other side. Granted, the homeowner that shot this woman was completely unjustified and they were convicted and going to jail. But still give that some thought.
Well, Riley, so let's play this out. You know, I'm in a car accident. I'm now knocking on people's doors. How are you? And you know, adrenaline's going, you're very frantic. Maybe put yourself in that thought process and say, okay, I need help. I need help immediately. How do I approach the situation? Can't find my phone. Hey, I have this number that you can call. Please just call 911. I just need you to call 911. I don't need to come into your home for that. Please just call 911. I'm going to go back to my vehicle. It's located here. Mm. You think about that process. How can you, knocking on that door, say, hey, I need help in a respectful manner to everybody?
Right. So you're not totally freaking the homeowner out.
Exactly. And then protecting yourself from that potential interaction that nobody wants. Stay alive.
Yeah. There was a situation here in Denver where it was kind of similar, but it was a dude that was like abducted and then stripped naked and robbed and dropped off in the middle of nowhere. And he finds himself at the door of, you know, the nearest house he could find completely naked. And, you know, they're freaking out and they're like, they're grabbing their guns and stuff, you know? And rightfully so. But anyway, just something to think about, be mindful of. But I think
can't prepare for every situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the reality of it, is that we honestly cannot prepare for every possible scenario, but we do try to be, at least I hope.
Well, and good on you guys for reporting and saying, hey, this is what's happening, you know, and giving people the option. There are crazy stories out there everywhere, and try to make a better approach to it if possible.
Yeah. Well, I told you in the beginning of the episode that, you know, this could be called something to do with, you know, week of the shotgun. So we have two final justified stories here to share where shotguns are involved. And the first one is interesting, you know, because we just did an episode, Jacob, where we talked about a lot of the focus of that. I mean, it was the 300 negligent discharges episode where we talk about all these different negligent discharges, you know, who caused them, who got hurt. You know, a lot of times children are unfortunately involved in these situations. And you know darn well that the anti-gunners would have it be so that children never came in contact with a gun. But in this next justified story, we have a minor. Now, granted, he's almost an adult, but he's a 17-year-old minor who has to use a gun to defend himself and his home and possibly his family. I don't know. But I assume there was others at home because this occurred at 4:16 a.m. this past Sunday in Edmondson County, Kentucky, where this teenager was confronted by two men who attempted to enter the residence. And I believe they did gain some entry. For some reason, these two men had intended to go and confront whoever was in this house. The two men got into a confrontation with the teenager, who then retrieved a shotgun and fired it at one of the men, striking him in the abdomen. Ooh, ouch. The adults left the scene prior to the arrival of law enforcement. So these two suspects, and they were both located at the probably the nearest hospital. The wounded man was admitted, enlisted in critical but stable condition. Very lucky, but I promise you, getting shot by a shotgun, especially if it was like birdshot, they're digging little pellets out of that dude's gut for hours and hours and hours. This was reported on Bowling Green Daily News, local newspaper / website there. And there you go. I love this story because I think we had a similar story, Jacob, a number of months ago in Kentucky, maybe, or Tennessee or something, where like a 13-year-old kid grabbed an AK-47 and defended his home.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about this kind of thing. You know, I honestly like don't know where I stand, because as a general rule, I also agree with the idea that, you know, that minors and kids, and certainly a 13, 14-year-old, probably shouldn't have immediate access to an AK-47 on the fly. I feel like those feelings are pretty cemented. But yeah, every once in a while we get one of these justified stories where a teenager, successfully defends themselves and or other family members, you know, younger children often, with a gun, and in this case a shotgun. So I'm inclined to say that, you know, in this case, great, like successful outcome, everyone's okay, you know, the good guys are okay and things are good. But how do you actionably take that home and as a parent and say, okay, this is going to be my game plan? I don't know. Hopefully I figure it out before my kids get a little older.
Yeah.
I say, you know, I completely agree. Young children should not have ready access to a gun. It sounds like these parents may have said to the kid at some time in his life, if you ever do need to do this, here's how you get to it. Hopefully they had the conversation that you can't take that shot back once it's fired. I don't know. I'm glad that he was a little bit older, and I hope that no other young children in the house have access to that gun. Almost close right. to a carry age, if you will.
Right.
But I very much mixed feelings overall. Glad the good guys are good to go. Bad guys are on the receiving end, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's what I will say is that, this 17-year-old boy in this case, odds are pretty high, and I'm just guessing. I really have no idea, but I'm just guessing that he has shot that shotgun before. Maybe he's been hunting. Maybe he's been through a hunter safety class. Maybe he's been out in the woods with his dad a dozen or two times. Maybe he's been to a gun range. So I do think that, you know, the decision aside, which is a difficult decision about how to handle that as a parent, what is clear is that the more experience and training and education and knowledge that those children have, the better.
Yeah. You know, so it's obviously a decision that every parent has to make for themselves and for their household and their children at some point. I know that there's households out there where until they're 18, they're, or maybe even never, you know, because it might be one of those things where it's like, you get your own gun someday when you're legal to do so, and now you can have a gun. But, you know, I grew up and I was totally trusted when I was, by the time I was probably 14 or 15, I had a 22, little 22 rifle. And actually I had a 30-30 hunting rifle as well. And I had complete access to those. That came over, you know, a period of time where I was trusted. You know, I had earned that trust. I had been through the training. I had demonstrated that I was capable of handling those. You know, and me and my buddies, we'd totally, you know, we'd grab the little 22s and go out and shoot rabbits, you know, or whatever. It just was, you know, but we grew up in rural Idaho. And I think that's a tendency, though, in rural areas where the guns are more of a part of the lifestyle, and it's a regular part of lifestyle. It, you know, it just makes sense to me. I mean, right now, my 10-year-old son, it's not like I would just let him have free will, you know, and reign of the guns in the house, not even close. But if he was to find a gun, you know, just sitting around, I know darn well he would handle it properly because I've seen it in him. He's demonstrated time and time and time again, you know, that he is capable and mature enough. He understands the safety and he demonstrates it. And in fact, he teaches his younger siblings about gun safety. And that's probably what for me, like, really is like, wow, like he gets it and he's demonstrating it in a proper way because he's also educating his younger siblings because we have these conversations in the household. So, you know, I don't know if there's going to be a time anytime soon where it's like, hey, bud, here's your 22. And like, we don't live out in the country, so I don't know what he would do with it. You know, I do think that it's something every household's got to decide. And that's certainly not an easy decision to make. But, but a 17-year-old, yeah. I mean, I remember kids in high school that had shotguns in their hanging in their back window of their pickup trucks. So, yeah. Now, another shotgun story, and I saved this for last because this one I just it just really drives the point home. In Miami Gardens, Florida, a young mother armed with a shotgun scares off burglar, and so she's sitting at home. She got a 10-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son. This guy, and you see a surveillance video. This is really great video because he pulls up on the grass on the front lawn of their house in his car, which is kind of bizarre, right? But obviously, it's intended for so he can make a quick getaway. And he attempts to force his way into the house. She grabs a shotgun, said that she did not. And she did not fire the gun, and she did not want to fire the gun. In fact, she even said that she didn't want her children to be traumatized from having to shoot and kill this guy. Now, I think she probably would have if it had gotten to that point, but she was able to scare this guy away with her shotgun. And so go check out the link in the show notes of today's episode. This was reported on the local ABC News affiliate, Channel 10, there in Florida. The surveillance video is right there in the news article, and it is kind of fascinating to watch. But basically, as soon as she comes at him with the shotgun, he takes off a running and jumps in that car, and away he goes. So, looks like that we've lost Jacob. So, Greta, it's just you and I to wrap up the episode today.
All right, let's make it happen. I think this kind of ties in really nicely to the conversation we were just having about how are you going to use that video surveillance system. It seems like this woman's like, hey, lawn on the car. This is not a great situation for me to be in. What am I going to do? Go grab my trusty shotgun. Let the guy know, hey, I have a shotgun. I'm protecting my family. I think it's interesting that she didn't want to use it to traumatize her kids. I'm in full support of that. It's interesting.
Yeah. Like I said, I suspect mama bear instincts, I mean, they did kick in, and I think they would have kicked in if her children's life came into the picture. I suspect that she would have had no problem pulling the trigger. But I like you said, I thought it was worthwhile noting that she was concerned about the trauma her children would experience if she had had to shoot this guy. But this is the wonderful thing about the Second Amendment in this country, Greta, is that people have the ability to defend themselves. I mean, we just had this attack in London a few days ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Very unfortunate. And a lot of people were injured. A number, you know, half dozen or so were killed. And the perpetrator had a knife.
Yeah.
Right? It's amazing how much damage you can do just with a knife. And here in a society and a culture like you find in London, England, which is a wonderful place. I mean, I've never been there, but I know people that have, and I plan to try to go there someday. But obviously, I mean, they are not able to have guns or even really carry any sort of weapon for self-defense in England. In fact, we shared, I think, an article once upon a time, way, I think in the early days of the podcast, how they're on a police website in England. It said like the only like completely for sure legal defense tool you could use against like an attack on the street or something was essentially a rape alarm.
What?
Yeah.
How does that make any sense for anyone?
But you can't carry a knife around for purposes of self-defense in England, right?
Wow. Wow.
And how much of a shame is that? You know, because here you have a situation where, I mean, that law obviously doesn't apply to this criminal that runs around and stabs all these people. And if you talk about hand-to-hand defense, disarming a knife, I think, is harder than disarming a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're going up face to face against a dude or a dudette with a knife, you're gonna get cut.
Yeah.
Even all the disarming techniques that I'm familiar with, like the instructor would be lying to you if they said you're not going to get cut.
Right.
You with need the gun,
to go
it's like
a knife fight, knowing that you are going to get cut.
Right.
It's not going to be fun for anybody.
Right. I mean, with a gun, you may or may not get shot. And if you do it right, in theory, if the gun goes off, at least initially, it should be, you know, not at you, because all the techniques with disarming a gun, you are getting yourself out of the line of fire and getting the gun away from you and taking control of that. But a knife, man, that sucker's going to cut you up. So.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, my point is like you got all these people that are defenseless, and I love these stories like this one out of Florida with this mother, a young mother, I might add, who is able to prevent something really bad from happening simply because she has a gun.
And she, you know, I think it's really great that she states in the article, I didn't want to fire it, and it seems like it was her last resort. You know, it was truly her last resort. However, it was an option for her. I think it's always great to have the option.
Yep, exactly. And the Second Amendment is, as freedoms are in general in this country, at least I hope, is it's all about giving us options. Because when we take freedoms away, it takes options away. So I like how you said that, Greta.
Yeah, options, all about it.
So, yeah, any final thoughts?
No, I thank you guys so much for allowing me to be here. It was a true honor to sit and chat with Jacob and yourself live. I would love to come back in the future.
Well, we hope to have you back and plan to, I might add. Jacob did have to bow out. He had an appointment to get to, and I did not keep a close eye on the time. And so away he went. So we appreciate everything that Jacob does, but Greta, it's been a pleasure to have you. That are, you know, just, you know, tuning in, although typically you listen to podcasts from the beginning to the end, but, Greta, you are, going to be on with us, hopefully a bunch of times, with the podcast. why don't you just take a brief moment and tell folks just a little, you know, like 20-second tease about who Greta is, just so they kind of know who you are, where you come from.
Yeah, sure. So, hey there, podcast land for Concealed Carry. A little bit about me. I seriously got involved within the gun industry about 2.5-3 years ago, and I have taken it full force, went out and got some NRA instructor certification, avid concealed carrier, and also run competition as well. So train to whatever your desire is and stay safe out there.
Great. And Greta, you are, from what I've seen, a talented instructor and one heck of a shot. So, oh, well,
thanks, Riley. That's too kind. I appreciate that.
And you're doing making a lot of efforts in trying to bring more women into the shooting sports as well, which I think is wonderful.
Yes, please. And women, just take step one, you know, go to a range, try it out, and then, you'll really know how you feel about firing a gun. I think that's something that is a big inhibitor for women. Don't be afraid of it. It's like a curling iron, ladies. It's a tool that can hurt you until you learn how to use it.
Yep. Yeah.
Weird analogy for you, Riley. I hope that the ladies get it. I have a lot of ladies be like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. So I know you don't get it. I know you don't have a lot of hair over there.
No, it does make sense. I don't completely relate, but that's the important thing here is, Greta, I think you do a really great job of relating with women, what they are experiencing as they kind of enter into the path and on to the journey of firearm, you know, ownership and shooting and concealed carry. And so that's why we're going to have you back. So folks, if you're listening, we know most of you, because of the survey we ran a month or so ago, that most of you are guys that listen to our podcast, which, hey, we love you guys. But we hope to also, you know, bring in a little bit more of the female element, and Greta is going to help us do that. So we're super excited. Guys, you know, maybe your wife wouldn't typically listen to a podcast like this, but maybe you might be able to entice her because we have the wonderful Greta on. And so, yeah, share it with your wives and your other female friends and family. We hope it'll be a help to them. So today's episode, a reminder, was brought to you also, besides 6-Hour Ammunition, Sports Afield. Now available at their lowest price ever on concealedcarry.com, Sports Afield brings you a series of handgun vaults that will beat any competitor in price and quality. In addition, you can now find select full-size safes from Sports Afield on concealedcarry.com. The shipping is reasonable and the warranty is second to none. All full-size safes have a lifetime warranty that even covers the paint. Trust this 100-year-old American brand with your firearm storage. And you can check those out at concealedcarry.com/sportsafield. And also, today's episode is sponsored by the book Shoot to Win by Chris Chang. This book from Top Shot winner and pro shooter Chris Chang is all about how to become a better shooter. Chapters include safety, cleaning, storage, accessories, dry fire practice, in addition to core fundamentals like trigger control, sight alignment, grip, and much, much more. Endorsed by some of the top shooters in the game, check out Shoot to Win, now available for sale on concealedcarry.com at concealedcarry.com/shoot-to-win. On our next episode, this Wednesday, we have a special one. We teased it in our Wednesday episode last week, where we are going to be talking with Silencer Co. And we are super, super excited. In fact, as you're listening to this podcast right now, myself and Jacob are on the road driving to West Valley City, Utah, where Silencer Co. is based. Silencer Co. has an amazing story, I think. They haven't even existed as a company for quite 10 years. And they went from literally a nobody to the biggest player in the suppressor market in a very short order. They always have one of the most impressive and fun and entertaining and interesting booths to see at SHOT Show each year, and just are making killer suppressor and silencer products. So, and the big thing, the big news, and it has been for some time, but this year I think we're finally going to see them hitting store shelves, and that is the Maxim 9 pistol. So we'll be getting some time, some range time with the Maxim 9, as well as some other things there with Silencer Co. We hope you'll tune in, where we'll have a special interview with, I believe it's probably going to be Jason, but it could be Josh. I don't know. We're working on who exactly it is going to be sitting down with on Wednesday's episode of the podcast. So hope that you'll check it out and enjoy that content, particularly if we look at the possibility of a silenced pistol that you can carry concealed. So I know that would be really intriguing, at least for me. So we'll see if that's even a possibility. I know there's some folks working on making that a possibility and a reality. So we'll talk about that more on Wednesday's episode. So as always, we would love to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your mobile or listening device. And also go check out our pages on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, and follow, like/subscribe, whatever, us there. We've got some great video content coming soon. We're working on this really great extreme test slash review of the new M&P M2.0 9mm pistol, comparing it to the SIG P320, as well as the classic Glock 17. And I think you'll be surprised at what comes out of that. And we're not taking it easy on these things. So really put them through their paces. We're working on that video content as well as it'll be a written review article as well. So great stuff coming. So with that, we're going to wrap it up for today. Greta, it's been such a pleasure. We missed Jacob as well as he had to bow out early. But Greta, thanks for joining us again. We look forward to seeing you in the near future.
Thank you for having me. Happy to see you guys again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, we will sign off. Take care, train well, be safe, be responsible citizens, and we'll catch you next time.
Reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. The Concealed Carry Podcast, Concealed Carry Inc., ConcealedCarry.com, and their affiliates strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in this podcast.